This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's great to have you with us for the Wednesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto, 75 degrees and beautiful sunshine in Chicagoland. Personal Finance Wednesday. If you have a lot of credit card debt, is there actually a way you can negotiate that debt down? World events continue to influence international energy markets as there is a roller coaster on oil. We'll cover that in our next segment. Right now, the Fed expected to cut interest rates, announcing it next hour, while there's important data from the housing market as well. To give us some insight, we welcome back to the show Diane Swonk, chief economist at Grant Thornton here in Chicago. Diane, I guess right now about the only way that there would be news made is if the Fed didn't lower interest rates.
Well, that is one way to make a lot of news, and no, they're not going to disappoint. I think they will lower rates by a quarter point, but I also think we're going to see Chairman Powell hold his cards very close to the vest about whether or not he's going to cut rates again. The Fed is very divided on this, and in fact, the growing number within the Fed are sort of, let's hold our powder dry until we see the whites of the eyes of a recession. So I think that's going to be the hard part for Chairman Powell, is to say we've cut rates as a hedge against these risks that we face, and any future rate cuts will really be contingent on both the data coming out. It is actually weakened. Do we see the whites of the eyes of a recession, and or do we see a further escalation in trade tensions? Of course, the Fed is hoping that we don't, but a lot of uncertainties out there on everything from Brexit to U.S.-China trade talks, which are supposed to be going on right now.
In general, do you think it's a good idea for the Fed to keep its cards close to the vest? You've had a lot of telegraphing in recent years.
This is, at this stage of the game, given how little the uncertainty that we face in terms of the risks that we could see weaker global growth and the risks that we could see more fallout from trade wars, I think that is important to do, because on the other side of it, the economy is still expanding and they don't have a lot of wiggle room to really stimulate when they need to. So I think this is a time when they have to sort of be a little bit of a dodger, an artful dodger is what I call Chairman Powell. He will artfully dodge questions about what it will take for the next rate cut, because they're not quite certain where it's going to come from, and they may end up considering a rate hike down the road. You're going to see a spectrum of views come out in what they call this infamous dot plot, which can be quite confusing. He'll de-emphasize that today. But I think, you know, what the Fed's trying to do now is just sort of steady the ship. We're going through these what could be turbulent waters ahead, and we want to make sure we've got all the tools we've got to navigate when we get there and not give too much away.
Fed expected to make that announcement just after 1 o'clock Chicago time. We'll let you know when they do. Diane, I want to ask you about housing starts. A 12-year high in August. Is this lower interest rates? Maybe people more likely to take on a mortgage? What's going on here?
Well, almost all of the gain was highly concentrated in the multifamily market, mostly in the South, also a little bit in the Northeast. These are areas that in recent years have been really hard hit by hurricanes. So part of it was, surprisingly enough, a better than usual hurricane season than we've seen in the last couple of years. It's baked into the seasonally adjusted data that we get out there. But the multifamily market is picking up. It's not good for the single family market. The gains there were still pretty small and off a very low level, not anywhere near those 12-year highs, and still well below demand in the market, which has been really difficult for those millennials who want to jump into the market and buy a home. We did see a little more in the purchase application, because the minute that rates picked up in the mortgage market, we saw people jump into the market to try to lock into what they were afraid would be the last in low rates in terms of the long-term mortgages. That data actually did show up as a pickup in home buying, but the bottom line is that we're still seeing very suppressed home buying compared to the past. Affordability is an issue. People are renting instead.
Always good analysis. Thank you. Diane Swonk, chief economist at Grant Thornton here in Chicago. Again, the Fed expected to make its announcement about interest rates just after 1 o'clock today. Coming up, tracking the latest turn by the global oil market. It is still a roller coaster on oil. What might that mean at the gas pump for you? The tax on production facilities in Saudi Arabia, also nuclear tension with Iran. It's causing the roller coaster on oil. Let's see what it means, maybe what we can expect, especially at the gas pump. Patrick DeHaan is joining us here, senior petroleum analyst at GasBuddy.com. Patrick, I guess this just shows you how any, I don't want to say little world event, but anything going on any side of the planet could really impact us here.
It's an amazing event that happened over the weekend. Of course, oil prices shooting up to begin the work week 14%, and now we are spot on in territory that we were a week ago, a dramatic turnaround after the Saudis indicating that they can return this production back online quicker than expected.
That's what's fascinating when you watch the price of oil, though, is one day you have this attack, everything just skyrockets. The next day they go, hey, you know, we'll get it figured out. It'll be fine. And now 2 days in a row, oil's been down significantly.
Yeah, that's right. Doing a lot of corrections here. It's really dizzying trying to keep track of it all. I can only imagine what motorists are feeling at the pump, having seen prices go up. Now they may come back down sooner than expected. And of course, we saw a build in oil inventories from the EIA today as well.
And let's talk about the rise in gas prices. So a lot of that, when people see that at the pump, it's speculative, right? Because the gas that's actually in the tank that's being put in the car, well, it's already in the tank. So, I mean, you see what I'm saying here? I mean, this is how gas prices end up working. They're sort of looking forward when they charge you.
You know, and very similar to us, gas stations probably were sending their tankers out to refuel on Monday before the market locked in those changes, because if a station didn't fill up prior to, say, about 6 p.m. on Monday, those stations filling up after were paying 25 cents a gallon more as the market follows futures markets. So if a gas station didn't get lucky, they were paying more, and those increases were passed along fairly quickly.
So when it comes to actually getting gas in your car, there's really no way to time this, right? Because day to day, maybe even throughout the day, there could be price changes?
Well, there certainly could be. Station owners, it's just like airlines trying to adjust ticket prices. They need a competitor to match that. And so the difficulty for a station owner is, you know, you're going to be paying 25 cents a gallon more. You try to start raising prices before you get that gasoline, because by the time you get it, hopefully you've passed the increase along so you're not losing it. You're sure. But that's the problem with gasoline retailers, is oftentimes they really can't raise the price as fast as their cost goes up.
Talk about just the change in the last decade or so as the U.S. has produced more and more oil. It's now the world's largest oil producer. It seems like there would have been a time when a bombing like this in Saudi Arabia would have just sent everything skyrocketing, really no end in sight. And now, because of the strength of the U.S., for the most part, it's a blip.
That's right. The slow creep up in U.S. domestic oil production has really insulated us from this being a much more significant event. I think without question, had we not been in this place that we are now, say 10 years ago, if we were producing, you know, 5 million barrels a day, we would be relying on the Saudis for much more of our oil imports. We could easily be talking about this attack resulting in a $30 to $50 barrel impact instead of the $8 to $10 barrel price impact that we saw.
Yeah, I don't think anyone expected prices to just start going back down like that, too. I mean, everyone thought Monday might just be the start of the increase in oil.
Less pain on the pump for motorists. I'm sure that's music to their ears.
Yeah, we will take it for sure. Thank you, Patrick DeHaan, senior petroleum analyst at GasBuddy.com. Oil today down right about 2.5%. It's back in the $57 range. Up next, how social media influencers are being utilized in marketing campaigns.
It's 60 Minutes of Financial Planning. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Companies and brands are increasingly turning to social media to get their messages out. Let's learn how they're using influencers to help spread the word. We welcome Adam Williams, CEO of Takumi, based in London, England. Adam, welcome to the Noon Business Hour. So I guess we need to define a little bit of this here. First off, when we talk about social media influencers, do we just mean celebrities, or are there other people we're talking about?
Hi, Cisco. It could be anyone, really, but anyone we look at who has over 1,000 followers, could be 10,000 followers on Instagram. So it doesn't have to be a celebrity, but quite often it's someone who might have a niche passion point and that just people congregate around them, but they're incredibly powerful and they can influence people and brands.
So you mentioned as few as 1,000 followers or 10,000 followers is someone who can have an influence.
Absolutely. And quite often actually they are more engaging than the bigger influencers, because if you follow someone and only has 1,000 followers, quite often either they're your mate or they're someone that you really like their content. So they can be incredibly powerful.
So how would companies partner with these influencers in order to get the word out? What would this look like?
Well, I think you have to give them the influencers are the experts of their audience, so you need to give them a really clear brief. but allow them to be the creative director. Allow them to tell the story of your brand because they can translate it best. But it can be anything from a video to an image. It could be an event that they could attend. So there's quite a few different ways that they can get involved.
And when it comes to the actual influencer agreeing to partner up, this isn't a one-sided relationship, too. They have to feel comfortable with the product or the brand as well.
Absolutely. And that's the only way you can get authenticity. That's the only way that the followers or the consumers who follow the influencers will actually buy into it. And the most powerful influencers absolutely won't work with a brand that's not right for them. And even sometimes we've heard that the followers of the influencers will actually tell them off if they feel that they've worked with a brand that's not right for them.
Yeah, and talk about another thing that I think turns off some folks is when it's just very obvious that an influencer is pushing something. It seems like that might be a reason someone would unfollow them.
Absolutely. It's actually one of the main reasons. So, I mean, 67% of consumers from a white paper we've recently done said they would unfollow someone if they incorrectly labeled the post. I personally think that's really great because it means that if you're doing something unauthentic, then actually it's not going to work. And as an influencer, you're not going to hang around for very long.
So how do influencers get connected in a situation like this? Is it companies finding them or are they reaching out to the companies? It seems like something that makes a lot of sense, but that certain influencers might not even know how to get started.
Exactly. So there are a number of services like ourselves that can connect, but also brands do reach out to certain influencers that they feel are very relevant and fit their brand values and they feel a brand safe. But also influencers quite often do directly reach out, but sometimes that can be in their thousands. So it can be a little bit of a laborious process, but there are a number of platforms that can really help them.
Yeah, really fascinating stuff. A new way of using the new media. Thank you, Adam Williams. He is CEO of Takumi, based in London, England. Still ahead, Personal Finance Wednesday, ways to negotiate down your debt.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. People struggling with credit card debt may be able to get some relief through negotiation. We'll learn how in Personal Finance Wednesday. This is Walmart and Capital One team up on a new rewards card. The expected cut in interest rates by the Federal Reserve will have a direct impact on consumers. State regulators are calling into question a move by the owners of Arlington International Racecourse. A court battle is expected after the Trump administration revokes the state of California's authority to set tougher auto mileage standards. On Wall Street, the Dow down 89, NASDAQ down 57, and the S&P down 13 points. Oil today is down 2.5%. It is back in the $57 range. A sunny day in Chicagoland, no rain in the forecast, heading to a high of 82 degrees. Right now, it's 75. The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Walmart and Capital One are teaming up for a rewards card, and it includes a pretty significant cash back feature. Let's get all the details from Ted Rossman, industry analyst at creditcards.com. Ted, can I give us the nuts and bolts of this Walmart card with Capital One?
This new offer has two different flavors. There's a co-branded Capital One Walmart MasterCard, which you can use anywhere, and then there's a store-only version. The quick summary is that both cards will give you 5% back all the time at Walmart.com, 5% back in the first year only at Walmart physical stores. It'll be 2% after that. And then they also give you 2% back on dining and travel. It's 1% on everything else.
Seems like it is especially designed to get people online.
It is. And this card, like Apple Card, is going to be digital first. So you can apply for it in the Walmart app. You can get that card housed in the app. They want you to pay with mobile payments to get the best rewards. All of this is fine. I just think that this doesn't stack up so great against their main competition. Target's card gives 5% back all the time at Target stores and on the website. And Amazon is 5% back all the time at their website and at Whole Foods if you have that Prime Rewards credit card. Walmart's lagging a little bit, especially after the first year.
Seems to almost make you wonder if this is a teaser. They'll see how good it goes, and if it is successful, then they'll just keep it going.
It definitely could be. I'm not surprised that they're copying the Apple Card emphasis on online payments. Walmart has been a notable holdout. They don't even accept Apple Pay or other mobile payment services. They want you to use their own app. So I think that's kind of a doubling down here on their loyal customer base.
Really interesting. We'll see how it goes, and we'll have you back. Ted Rossman, an industry analyst at creditcards.com. Walmart and Capital One teaming up for a credit card. Later on, Personal Finance Wednesday, how to renegotiate if you find yourself in a lot of credit card debt. That is coming up at 12:39. Markets are lower at this hour. Talking about it, Vahan Janjigian, Chief Investment Officer at Greenwich Wealth Management, based in Greenwich, Connecticut. Markets down a little bit today, Vahan. What are you seeing?
Hi, Cisco. Yeah, the markets are a little weak right now, but of course, they're on hold pretty much until we see the Fed announcement. The Fed will be letting us know at about 2 o'clock what they're going to do. The expectation is another rate cut. You know, in my opinion, they shouldn't be doing that. I don't even think the last rate cut was necessary. I'm getting concerned that these rate cuts are signaling either that the Fed is capitulating to the demands of the president, who keeps demanding rate cuts, or the economy is much worse than the Fed is telling us.
That's the interesting thing about rate cuts, right? Is if they're doing it, it doesn't necessarily, I mean, it's not a good sign for the economy if they're cutting rates.
No, it's not. Usually the Fed will cut rates when the economy is slowing. And right now the economy is slowing, but it's not slowing enough that we would be afraid of having a recession anytime in the near future. Now, of course, that could happen. I think it's, you know, very likely that we will have a recession perhaps a year or a year and a half from now. After all, recessions are normal parts of the business cycle, and we haven't had one in a while. So we are due for a recession, and, you know, mild recessions every once in a while are not a big deal and things that we could easily handle. But for the Fed to be cutting before there's really any strong indication that we might be having a recession in the near future is a bit concerning to me. As I said, it indicates that either they're giving in to the president, or maybe they know more than they're telling us.
Now, when it comes to what everyone is paying attention to with the Fed today, is it the announcement of this rate cut that's expected, or is it really what the Fed says about what it plans to do in the future?
Well, the announcement of the rate cut is definitely expected, but what will really move the markets is what the Fed says about the future, and in particular what Jerome Powell says during the press conference, which is after the announcement of what they're going to do with interest rates. Last time, as we saw, that when the rate cut was announced, there was really not much of a reaction in the stock market. But half an hour later, when the press conference began and people weren't pleased with some of the answers Mr. Powell gave, we saw a big sell-off in the market.
One of the story stocks today is FedEx. It is down, something like 13.5%. What's going on with FedEx?
Yeah, that's a bit concerning because FedEx, of course, is a transportation company. I mean, they ship things all over the world, and if their business is slowing down, that itself could be a sign of a slowing economy. So that is worrisome. But it seems to me that their problems are really much more company-specific. You know, they did mention, for example, that they lost a major customer, and the speculation is that that's Amazon.
Let's talk about oil, energy in general. Investment opportunities, should people be looking at energy companies given what has gone on in oil? I mean, it's kind of back to earth here after the big rise on Monday.
Yes, you know, even before what happened in Saudi Arabia, we've gone through a period of time where oil prices had inched up from their lows, more than inched up from their lows, but oil-related stocks did not. They remained very depressed. So I do think there's a very good buying opportunity in these oil-related stocks, and it's something that I'm taking advantage of in two ways. I'm using the XLE, which is an ETF of oil-related companies, particularly Chevron and Exxon, and I'm also buying Murphy Oil, which is an exploration and production company, which I think is very undervalued.
Really interesting. XLE, that's an ETF, and Murphy Oil. Thanks so much, Vahan Janjigian, Chief Investment Officer at Greenwich Wealth Management. Up next, Personal Finance Wednesday, using the power of negotiation to reduce your debt.
your best stock option. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday on the Noon Business Hour. The amount of consumer credit card debt is on a rapid rise. Let's get some help in dealing with it. Michael Bovey is joining us, a consumer debt expert at HelloResolve.com, based in Oakland. So, Michael, when we talk about in some way negotiating out of your debt, I mean, is this where you just call a credit card company and start having a discussion with them? I mean, how would that even work?
So typically, in order to settle for less than what you owe, you have to be behind. So you have to be in trouble already, almost already in collections. I like it when people deal with their bank like you suggest, but you can basically negotiate a debt for less than what you owe at any time after you've fallen behind by at least 90 days.
And so if someone is behind and if they don't think they're going to be able to really get back on track, what does this look like? They call and they just let the credit card company know that they're in a tough financial spot?
Yeah. So if you're trying to get a deal, you want to focus on things that are making it tough to be you financially right now and not focus on anything optimistic. You know, if things were bad and you fell behind and things are on the up and you're trying to take care of past issues, talk about the past issues, not the future, just to deal with the past.
And if you do that, you probably have to have a handle on what your other expenses are, you know, whether it's a medical situation or a mortgage situation or whatever, so that you actually have some data going into that phone call.
You bet. You want to be able to follow through on whatever you're offering. And if you owe $5,000 and you're telling them that you can do two, or you come to some kind of terms and you're going to pay it off for $2,000, you obviously want it in writing first, but you also want to know that you can pay. And that means covering all of your other bases before you engage in something like that. So you want to make sure you have it.
Is it important to think in terms of win-win here, where the credit card company doesn't wipe away all of your debt, or they certainly don't want to do that. However, they also don't want to end up with nothing.
It is. It's a win-win. I mean, you couldn't do what you couldn't do when you couldn't do it, and now you can. And they're more than happy to receive something better than nothing. Otherwise, they'll sell it off for pennies on the dollar, or they'll engage with a collection agency and lose a percentage of whatever the collection agency gets to collect. So you're helping them collect more.
Now, what does this look like as far as your credit? How does it impact you? If you're already late, so you're already getting some dings on your credit report, but if you call and get some sort of a negotiated settlement, how does that impact it?
So they have an obligation as a furnisher of information to the credit bureaus to only provide accurate, complete, up-to-date information, right? If you do a settlement, they're going to, most of them are very good about it, but follow up and check. They're going to update your credit to show that it's a zero balance owed. And you can bounce back from those kind of things. You want to get them all done, not just like 2 out of 5, because you're still not going to increase your credit much. But if you get them all done like that, you can start to improve your financing options.
And do you have to expect, too, that they're going to shut that card off? I mean, they're not going to negotiate a settlement and then let you keep spending on the card.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, no, and that's really one of the reasons why you wait until after 90 days, because typically they're going to have that account closed and it's already 3 months late. The credit damage already happened. You can't unring that bell.
Really good insight. Thank you so much. Michael Bovey, a consumer debt expert at HelloResolve.com. Thanks for being with us on Personal Finance Wednesday. This time tomorrow, Technology Thursday. Still to come, gauging the impact on your wallet of a likely interest rate cut. Will it matter?
An economy of words. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The Federal Reserve is expected to cut interest rates by a quarter of a point. It will release its latest decision in just a few minutes. Let's talk about the likely impact on consumers. David Jones, chairman of DMJ Advisors, based in Denver, author of the book Understanding Central Banking. David, I asked this of a guest earlier about the only way the Fed really makes news is if it says, you know, on second thought, we're not going to lower rates today.
That's very true. I think the whole world expects that quarter point rate cut at today's Fed policy meeting. Remember, we had the first one in this series back in July. Consumer will benefit, but we have to remember that the consumer has been looking at something close to free credit for a long time, so we probably won't get as much of a response from the consumer in terms of the cost of credit, the cost of mortgages this time, as perhaps was the case in earlier years, going back a decade or so. But the good news, I think, from the Fed is still going to be that our economy is moving ahead favorably, and the Fed just wants to keep it that way with another insurance rate cut. I'm looking for perhaps one more later in the year, either late October or perhaps mid-December. But it's important to emphasize these are simply insurance rate cuts. Keep the economy going the way the Fed wants it.
See, now, it's good to hear you say that and really interesting because I think ordinarily when we think rate cuts, we think, uh-oh, there's danger ahead, and that's why the Fed is doing this.
That's right. And we'll recall that the markets were looking for danger. That famous R word, recession, was all over the place a few months back. But the Fed was hanging in there by arguing that the economy is basically in a good place, but they simply want to keep it that way. And so we're getting a series of mid-cycle adjustments, as Chairman Powell referred to it. And as I say, it's probably at least three of those cuts through this year. My feeling is that the economy is okay. Of course, the trade sector still hurts. We saw those FedEx numbers. Terrible, given the fact they're close to trade in China. But even there, there's at least hope that we're getting back to talks with China. And the Fed gave us a good industrial production number for August, a bounce back from a weak July, up 0.6. That's a good number, 0.6. That's a good number for the Fed industrial production. So all things considered, we're in a favorable place with the economy.
As you mentioned earlier, though, for the most part, consumers aren't, they're not really going to feel this, even if money does get a little cheaper.
That's right. It's no great shakes. As far as the consumer goes, normally rate cuts mean everything to a consumer that needs to borrow to spend, but those rates have been extremely low for a long time.
David Jones, thanks for being with us, chairman of DMJ Advisors, author of the book Understanding Central Banking. And David will join us at the top of the show tomorrow with his analysis, not only of the Fed decision, but also their forward guidance, how they telegraph what else they may do later on in the year.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.